business, guy. That's business.
House Committee on Education will come to order. It is February 21st. Colleagues, for anyone that's listening that hasn't seen the agenda, we will not be considering Senate Bill 1538 any further this session. We have taken it off the agenda today, and it will not be coming back. So instead, I'm going to open up an informational hearing on racial disparities in discipline. And I'm really pleased that we have a lot of students here that are involved in the REAP program. And we have a few folks that are going to talk to us about this issue. And I'd like to invite Curtis Deshkins, Zach Fuller, and Lloyd Jones, please. Welcome. And in the committee, if you haven't, have any of you testified before the legislature before?
No.
It's fun. It's everybody's friendly.
All right.
But you just start with stating your name for the record, and then we are all ears and are looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Okay. I'm Curtis Deskins, and I'm in the REAP program. And we're pretty much just going to be talking about like how black students pretty much is like how we struggle during school times and after school and what we go through. And what I mostly feel is that I feel that we are represented as, like, not as created by, like, white people, but, like, created as no one cares about us, because as I was looking through my GPA and it was 2.2, they talked to my teacher and they said pretty much is they want me under a modified diploma. And that means pretty much is I'll get my GED, but I won't get my full college, like, I mean, high school, like, degree. So when we started talking about it, it was like, why would they put me at that position? So that's how I felt, as it was a little bit racist to me, because...
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
So the reason that they were suggesting a modified diploma was because of your grade point average?
Yeah.
And you know that the law says you don't have to take a modified diploma if you don't want
to.
Yeah,
we're not.
Okay, good.
Of course.
Hello, my name is Zach Fuller, and I am an ambassador for REAP. And thank you for listening today. So basically what I'm going to talk about is how blacks are treated in education and at our school, Madison High School. I believe that black students receive harsher treatment from teachers than white students in at Madison or in education, period, because teachers, in my opinion, look at black students differently than they would a white student, as in, like, if a black student is not doing well because of where he grew up or because he doesn't have a father figure to look at or to look up to, they're going to look at him like, oh, he's just a lost cause, or he's just a troubled child, and they don't know where that kind of background comes from. But if a white student is having trouble, in my opinion, they'll do, like, everything they can to help him out rather than help out an African-American student. I also believe that black students are being suspended more than white students just because of the threat that teachers and administrators think that black students have. Just because they're black, they automatically think that they're a threat and that they're just going to be like a hoodlum and just cause mayhem in school, rather than a white student who could probably be doing the same thing, but they won't get as judged like that because they're white. I think that the perception teachers have on black students is that they just, if you come from like a bad neighborhood, they assume just automatically that you're going to be a bad student and that you're a bad kid and you're not going to go anywhere in life. And I know that because my uncle, when he went to Madison High School, he said that counselor said that he wasn't going to add up to nothing and he might as well drop out of high school now. And that was coming from a counselor. So, especially like where you grow up, I think that's really important. And if a black student was supposed was to grow up in like a rich white neighborhood, I think they would view him differently than any other student. Things we can change to improve our experience in school is have like a black committee where all of us can unite as one and have like more say in what we do, and even have like black teachers. I think that would help a lot. Thank you.
You.
Hi, my name is Lloyd, and I'm also an ambassador of REAP. And something I see...
And I'm sorry, can you say your last name for the record?
Oh, too? Lloyd Jones.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Something I see that like also gets swept under the rug is, even though... Because I come from two different backgrounds. My mom's white and my dad's black. So as me being a mixed... as me being mixed with races, I still see the same issues that if I was to be fully black. And also, I feel like sometimes we get left out just as black people would against white people. When I was my freshman year, me and this other white kid had an altercation, and they decided to give me a longer suspension than him, but I didn't understand that because we did the same thing, and I felt I was being suspended for something longer that shouldn't have happened. But ultimately, I think from teachers and like richer white people that see stereotypes of black people, they perceive that any black person that comes across them is going to be the exact same, and that's what I don't understand. Like, I don't understand why teachers don't take the time to see how each black person is and their background that they come from before just automatically judging them. And that's pretty much what I have to say. But something I do say we could improve is just, instead of teachers just putting the black person down more than they would the white person, and like if there was like a situation between the two, instead of just accusing the black person of doing more damage than the white person did, to actually go in depth with it. Because some teachers don't fully go into it, and they'll say more mean stuff about a black person than they would about a white person, instead of actually finding out all the facts and then assuming who was wrong and who was right in that situation. And I think that's a problem we have in our education system today. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for being willing to come and share your stories and thoughts. Is it okay if we ask some questions?
Yes.
Great. So what questions are Representative Reardon?
Okay, well, first of all, thank you so much for coming today and helping us understand what's going on. It's really important, very courageous of you to do that. As one who got away with a lot of stuff as a kid, I wanted to ask you, do you ever see, you mentioned that sometimes the black kids will get punished more, or they'll get punished for doing the same thing the white kid. Do you ever think that maybe because you're black that you get away with some stuff? Does that ever happen? I'm trying to get at, are the teachers being even-handed?
I'll answer. I think sometimes that happens.
And it wouldn't be you, because you probably never did anything wrong. I'm talking about some other kids that probably did.
Yeah, but I think that sometimes it could happen, but most of the time probably not. I think that you could say that as an excuse, like, oh, he's failing his classes because he's a black boy or something like that, so we're just going to let him go. Or he doesn't know any better because he's black, so we're just going to let him get a freebie. I think that might happen, but not because of, like, they're feeling like like that's the right thing to do. They're feeling either like they're like pity them. Mm. So
thank
yeah.
I have something to add.
Of course.
To that. What I've seen over the years of my high school career and throughout my whole educational career is that teachers that give a fair solution to both sides when it comes down to a black and a white confrontation is what I have seen is those teachers have came from difficult backgrounds, so they understand both sides and they know how to handle it accordingly. But then when I see the black students getting treated worse than the white students, it's from teachers that haven't had the same difficult backgrounds or difficult upbringings as one of the black male students has had. And that's where I see the confusion in how they handle the situations is just from the stereotypes that blacks have on them already before they're even able to speak on what happened, is how they like take it into perspective more than they would instead of finding out what really, really happened.
Representative Gorsuch.
Do you guys all go to Madison? Is that right?
Yes.
So does Portland Police have a school resource officer at Madison?
Yeah, we have one, I believe.
Okay. And is your experience with the teachers similar to your experience with the police officers? Do you get the same feeling from them, or is it different?
I've had experiences with police officers, and I do feel that it is a similar, but most of the similar cases that I've had with teachers and police officers have been from white police officers and white teachers. When it's always been a black teacher, I've had a lesser kind of consequence instead of if it was to be from a white teacher and a white police officer. That's what I've seen in my case.
Follow up on that?
Well, it would be something that would deviate from that. I'm always interested in how people in high school view the police officer, and you know, how do they come into that building? Are they in full uniform and gun and everything? And how does that make you feel?
Me personally, like, it doesn't intimidate me, mm-hmm. because I know I'm not going to do anything that extreme,
right,
to come to drastic measures like that. But we are in high school, and we're all of the age, like, where we know right from wrong.
Right.
And I don't think you need to come in full suit just to monitor a high school. And the police officer that comes is like, he just comes and goes. So it shouldn't really have to intimidate anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Just to know that you're secure if anything does happen. And also on the other question that you had, I think that like the treatment is like kind of similar, but yet not all the way there, because they are on duty and they're supposed to protect us no matter what race or creed we are or anything like that. So yeah.
Follow up. So the reason I ask, and don't hold it against me, but in a past life I was a Portland police officer. I'm not now. I'm a teacher. So, but I teach criminal justice at Mount Hood Community College, and these are the sorts of issues that come up a lot. The questions of how people of color are treated by authority figures, but also I'm very interested in if school resource officers come in for any group, come in too official and too over the top. I don't know that we talk enough about the psychological impact of those sorts of things. So that's why I was interested in that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Gumber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks for being here, guys. I know it's hard to come up in this kind of environment, sit down in front of everybody else and talk to a bunch of legislators at the table. Tell me, if you would, a little bit about your favorite teacher. Tell me not who they are, but tell me why they're your favorite, what they've taught you, how they've reacted to you.
Okay. Well, my favorite teacher.
Do you have a favorite teacher?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, good.
You know, he's just like an outstanding guy. Like, if I ever had a problem, I could come to him and talk to him. He was like a counselor, basically, but a teacher at the same time. Like, and he wasn't even of my color. And it was just amazing to see how someone, like, I didn't expect that from him at all. Like, I could talk to him. He would, like, if I was having problems in class, he would wait till class was over and then pull me aside and ask if everything was going all right at home. He would play basketball with me, all kinds of stuff. Like, I just liked how he could connect with me and how I could talk to him if I ever needed someone to talk to.
I had a similar teacher to his. My teacher was also half of my kind, and but I also felt like if I needed to, like, if I was having family problems and I just needed to get it off my chest, he was like the only person I felt understood where I was coming from. And the one thing I liked about him is that he didn't care what race you were. He's going to be cold cut hard on you no matter what, where you came from, who you were. He always wanted to see students strive better no matter what their race or ethnicity was or their difficult background. If they did have a difficult background, he kind of took them into his wing more as if they were like his child and tried to help them more and try to help them to see that there's a better side than where they came from, and there's always a chance for them to change where they came from and strive to get better and then go back to their community and try to change what is going on in their community.
More of like what Lloyd said is, like, my teacher was like that. He was a little hard and he gave like a little bit of like of a push, but he didn't give it to like a where you can like copy it off. You can get a little bit more time on it, but you won't have a cheating process to cheat on, like other people be like, or copying the answers and saying like, hey, you can, this is what you do, is just copy that and all that. But like, most likely he'll give me the answers, then he'll tell me to look and mix up the questions for me. That way it's like I know the answer by heart instead of just like, oh, answer A, answer B. Thank you.
One more real quick, Madam Chair. How big are your classes? How many students in your classes?
Well, in the classes I've seen, the classes I've been in, we have at least 30 students, at least, in every class, sometimes more. But I don't know. It all depends on, like, how many teachers we have or who's in that day or if we have new students coming in. Some, like, the classes do get crowded a lot. But, yeah, we find our way to work through it.
Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate you guys coming in and your testimony. And as somebody that has helped chief sponsor bully bills in the past, there's never an excuse. And it all comes down to the teacher. And good teachers do the right things. Bad ones suck. And they make it tough on everybody, no matter what color you are.
Are you talking about me?
I'm just hoping you're listening. So I really do appreciate. I do want to let you know that there are some white kids down the street that have the same story that you do. Sometimes it's not just a color issue. I was reversed. There was this big black kid in my middle school, and he beat the crap out of me. That was one of the bully stories that I used to tell when we had the bully bill in 09 or whenever it was. And I was very misunderstood by my teachers. In fact, my mother still lives in my hometown, and I have heard stories where my high school teachers are just amazed that I'm not in prison and and I actually turned out to be something, and I'm not necessarily saying a legislator, but actually accomplishing something in life. So I'm being totally honest with you here. I'm not making this stuff up. I experienced everything you guys talked about except the modified diploma. I never had that conversation. But the rest of it, I've been there. I feel your pain. There's no excuse for it. And discrimination of any kind needs to stop, no matter who it's on, where it's happening. It needs to stop.
And, I agree with you. Like, good teachers, like, they know how to do the right thing, and bad teachers don't. And I also agree that it's not always about color. So, and, you know, some teachers just don't know how to look past that.
Other questions? Well, I just want to thank you again for coming. Are there others that are planning to speak today?
Yes.
Yes, there's another panel? Great. Well, thank you all very much. And we'll invite up the next panel. But I don't have your names on the list, so when you come up, you'll have to tell me who you are. Oh, different committee. So for Human Services, not for this committee. All right. Well, thank you all very, very much for coming. And I believe Representative Frederick had something he wanted. Oh, Representative Wisnick.
Did he speak to some of the directors of the program or something? If they're going to testify or not?
Did you want to come and talk about the program?
How often they meet? Or
yes. So why don't you both? Do you mind coming together? Great. I hate for anybody to be lonely.
Madam Chair, don't we have a one-time-a-week representative rule, and Representative Frederick has now...
Wait a minute. I'll yield his time. Or my time to him.
You don't get that.
Oh, I don't get to do...
Representative Frederick is an honorary member because he gets to spend the money on the bills we pass, so we have to be nice to him.
Sure.
I do, too.
Oh, and so does Representative Springer. I did not mean to disrespect Representative Springer, which I do too often. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Lou Frederick, a state representative from District 43. That's North and Northeast Portland, the Lloyd Center area. And I want to thank you for having this hearing to hear from some of the students. It is something that we don't get a chance to hear from here on a regular basis, what the students are saying, what the young people are saying. They have their particular perspective. We have ours. Teachers are going to have theirs. Administrators are going to have theirs. But one of the things that we have seen is clear disparities in discipline issues across the state. Most recently, and unfortunately she can't come and give the presentation, but the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs had a law student at Willamette University put together a report, and I'll try to get that to you, on discipline disparities across the state and some of the research that had been done across the country. It's pretty clear. And for me, I have seen a very clear situation take place, especially, and I'll put it this way, especially for young black men who are in fourth grade. When they get to be fourth grade, they tend to be about the same height as their teachers. And there, in many cases, that seems to create an extra special approach in terms of discipline for some of those young men. And that creates so that if they do something at that particular age, they tend to get a little bit more discipline because of that. And that can create problems. Not always the case, but I've seen it in enough schools in my district that it is a concern. What tends to break through that is the knowledge that they're doing that. And when their administrators and their other teachers, especially their other teachers, point that out to them, then there's a rethinking of what's going on there. But it has happened, and I've seen it take place with my kids and with their friends. And that ends up with them taking off down a particular road. If you start initially saying that a child is a bad kid, then they start to pick up that. And they start to say that they have a particular deficit that they do not. this is a concern, and it's something we're going to need to be able to address. And some of the young men that you heard today and some of the others that you can hear from later on at some point, you will hear that something started happening when they were about 10 years old. It was not something that happened in middle school or in high school, but they, in fact, started to find that they were being treated differently as a result of the color of their skin. And in some cases, you can have that take place in other sections of the country and sections of the state based on the economic level that is known in the community. So we have to begin to understand that we really want to address the students themselves individually and try to make it clear that we want to work with them all and get the chance for them to create a future for themselves and a vision of that future. So that's my concern. That's what I've been trying to approach over time. But the racial disparity issue is something that is a very clear one. I've seen it. I've seen the result of it. The result of it ends up being young people in a school-to-prison pipeline, which is something, it's a book that you should get a chance to read at some point, because it's very clear that that's part of what we've been seeing, especially within the black community. It is something that people are fighting vigorously about, and part of it clearly deals with what happens in terms of discipline in the schools. That's what I wanted to say. Is there any other questions for me?
Thank you, Representative.
No? Thank you.
Jackson.
Madam Chair, committee members, Mark Jackson, Loop Incorporated. Just want to, first of all, thank Representative Gelser.
And can you push the microphone just a little bit back, and that way we can hear you more clearly. Thank you.
But thank you for giving us the opportunity to have the students come today and to speak and to interface with legislator. Very important that we continue to create platforms for students to elevate their voice. That's the mission of REAP, to be able to untap that hidden potential of leadership. I think that it's important that we don't minimize the state of our students of color in this state. In Multnomah County, you're talking about black children are suspended 3 times more than their counterpart. For black males, it's 6 times 1. So there is a heightened issue we have to address, and I can appreciate this platform and the importance of continuing this conversation. And I believe House Bill 2092 really speaks to these types of policies that, in fact, remove kids from the classroom, I think by mistake. Most of the actual infractions deal with open defiance, classroom disruption, insubordination, all of which are subjective assessments by educators, where you find transgression or you find what you call it, maybe vandalism. These things, you know, are not the issue. The issue is this relational disconnect between educators and students of color. And it's important, if Oregon is going to remain economically viable across this country, we have to make sure we have the supports and the policies in place to ensure these kids are not excluded from learning, but are engaged and also are supported. And that's the significance of today, that we have 20 young men from 8th grade to college, right, trying to express their experiences, because if we have a deaf ear to their experience, then we lose our relevance of the future. So it's important you all continue to create these opportunities for students to speak. It takes a lot of courage to give transparent, vulnerable testimonies of what happens in the classroom. And I really applaud our governor, who has put in motion some real strategic investment dollars that support programs like REAP. And I encourage you all to continue to support his vision, because programs like REAP create more of a leverage asset to ensure all kids are supported and successful in their learning experience. Thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jackson and Representative Frederick. I just wanted to say to the young people, don't let the ignorance of an adult, a teacher, whatever, make you think you're less of a person or stupid or whatever. You can overcome the ignorance of an adult. I did. It took me a long time. I was pretty old before I figured out that I wasn't stupid. So you can overcome. Just because somebody's beat you down, you don't have to stay there.
Representative Reardon.
I'm going to chime in on that, if I may. I would ask the students to please help educate your teachers and the people that you come in contact with. You are tremendous spokespeople. And you've demonstrated great courage coming here today. I would ask you to just keep with that and polite, positive ways. But, dear teacher, did you know that you're doing this? And help understand, help spread the word. And thank you for helping educate us today.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for working so hard to make it possible for these fantastic young men to come today. And thanks again to all of you. I know several of us will see you in the next committee, which is in this hearing room at 3. And we look forward to hearing more from you then. So with that, I'm going to close the informational meeting on racial disparities in discipline and open a very brief, because I know you're all wondering how brief, informational hearing that is an update on the Task Force on High School and Transition Success for Students with Disabilities, which is the longest task force name ever in the history of the world.
May I ask a brief question, Madam
Yes.
Chair? Are these poor guys going to have to sit through 4 hours of committee?
No.
2 hours here and 2 hours the next one?
Of course, of course.
I'm feeling bad for them.
Thank you. The OSU Women in Policy can leave, but you don't have to leave if you don't want to. But thanks for coming to visit.
My guy'd be dying.
So we're in an informational hearing on the transition task force. This is just very brief. We have met now, Representative Springer's on it too, three times?
Three.
We've had three meetings. We've made a fair amount of progress in those meetings in terms of identifying some things that we can work on. One, we've already begun conversations with the department around the issues of transcripting. We had a really great presentation that was put together by some high school registrars, principals, and counselors who were identifying that when a student is taking a class and the class is modified, so they're getting a modified credit, even within a school district, there isn't a common way to denote that on the transcript, so it's confusing when it comes to graduation time. And if the student moves to another district, you have some cases where the student is suddenly given credit for things having been a regular credit rather than a modified credit. But what's worse is in some cases, if a kid has one modification, all of a sudden all of their credits are considered modified credits, which can become a barrier to their graduation. So we're working with the department to see how we might create a conversation that does not involve legislation that maybe through rule would allow us to create some uniformity. We've talked a little bit about the financial aid issues. Students that do not receive regular diplomas under a change in federal law are unable to get any financial aid or any federal financial aid to pursue any type of post-secondary education, which is problematic. At our last meeting, we were talking a little bit about how a diploma is defined, and I think we're going to be working with the department to write a letter of request to the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Education to look at the stringent standards for Oregon modified diplomas to see if they might consider that to be a diploma, because that is actually a definition that is in federal rule, not in statute. So it would not take an act of Congress to try to persuade the federal government to open up some more opportunity for our kids. A third thing that came up, we actually put into House Bill 4150. It's the idea of kids not getting their diplomas solely because of the ability to demonstrate that essential skill at the end. There's certainly a lot more to discuss around that, but for now, what we were fortunately able to move forward with in 4150 is the clarification that kids will be able to use their modifications, including text-to-speech and speech-to-text, when they are demonstrating their knowledge of essential skills. Other topics we've talked about are the requirements around highly qualified teachers and what that means for teachers in self-contained classrooms. How do you find that balance between the enrichment that kids need and the ability to be out in the general curriculum? What am I missing?
I don't think you're missing anything. I'll add a couple things maybe when you're done, but you're not missing anything. So I'll just be really frank. When I got put on this task force, I kind of thought, what do I have to add here? And I was surprised at the level of misunderstanding I had about the issue. And so a couple things that maybe I would just offer up to this committee as a context to look at this issue is this isn't just about, and we've talked about it a lot in this committee and in this body, modified diplomas, extended diplomas, and regular diplomas and all that. That is not the only piece of this conversation. One of the things that I found disheartening and disturbing was I might be messing up the term here, so fix whatever I make a mess of here. You can give students certain accommodations throughout the process. And then when it comes time to learn that skill in a test, that accommodation's pulled. So think about it. This is how you do business. Now let's see if you can do business, and we're changing the rules. I'm not saying you should have accommodations so everybody can get over the bar. I've never been about that. But to have that come up, I'd be one angry mom if I got to the end and my kid was asked to do this thing that he's been learning how to do, and we've been through our IEP years, how we do things, and now we do it differently. And there doesn't seem to be a graduation of that. It's just now it's different. And when you see students that are high-skilled and can't get that diploma, and have actually been accepted to a school, and then they can't get over that last hurdle, what have we done to the future of that student? I am not saying that's across the board in every circumstance. I'm not saying that we have to make it so everybody can feel good about what they're doing. I think we need consistent rules, and as we're teaching kids and bringing them through the process, students, we need to keep the rules the same, or at least graduate off those rules so there's an expectation of what's going to happen here in the final hours, the high school diploma. And so that was really a pretty startling realization for me. So this is not a conversation that is only about modified, extended, and regular diplomas. I think it's a much greater conversation than that. I don't have the answers. If I had the answers, I'd quit this job and write a book and make more money. But I think that is something I just offer up to my colleagues here as a lens to look at this process, not just simply how are we defining a diploma and making it so everybody can feel good about some diploma.
And I think the last thing...
Did I sum that up right?
Yeah, I think you did really well. The last thing that I'd add about the task force, I really give credit to the Oregon Education Investment Board who had the responsibility to appoint the task force. It's a very diverse task force geographically in terms of the types of kids that are served and in terms of the roles that people are playing within school districts. The other thing that surprised me, I think we've all been on a lot of task forces, is the investment that people have in the task force. People are coming to the meetings and offering up things that they want to present. We had our first meeting in November. I suggested that we not meet in December because December is busy. People really wanted to meet in December, then it snowed, so we weren't able to. And the other thing was the passion around these kids, particularly in the presentation that we received from the registrars and counselors. And if you think about the role of a registrar or a counselor whose entire job is to match kids and credits and kids and goals, these are people that are seeing these structural barriers that these kids that are working so hard are running up against. And there is so much energy and passion, and we don't often here get to talk about the counselors and the registrars and those people in high schools that are really, really essential to kids' success, and it's just a delight and an honor to have such energetic professionals helping us better understand these issues. And the task force is tasked with coming back with recommendations for legislation for the next session or recommendations to the department, and hopefully we'll be working with the department as well in that conversation around essential skills and graduation pathways that was in 4150. And hopefully that meets our statutory requirement to update the February session about what we're doing on the task force.
So noted, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions?
Since it is school and transition success, I hope as the department starts to implement 3264, which we passed in the last legislative session, there was a little bit, just so you're aware, there's a little bit of issue around the delivery of funds, but we hope that the project still works the way we had intended to do it, that that gets wrapped into that conversation as well as we look at, you know, those pathways. And so maybe to, I hate to task you with something else to do as part of this group, but this might be the appropriate place to just kind of add a little bit of that oversight or see how that project unfolds.
Okay, great. Anything further?
Another subject.
So do you want me to close this informational hearing? Okay. Per the request of Representative Wisnett, I'm closing the informational hearing on...
Didn't mean to preempt
on the Long Task Force. I'm opening an informational hearing on Gene Wisnett.
Can we have a work session?
Wait a minute. Can we take a vote on this?
Madam Chair, and for the committee members, a lot of you were sponsors and the chief sponsors on House Bill 3000, which we passed in the 2013 session. I'd like to report to you that there was I had a meeting with the Department of Education, I think yesterday, or was it yesterday before, with Mr. Saxon and Jan, and we had a representative from the Speaker's office and Representative Williams's office to hear what's going on. There's been a draft OR, and we had the meeting and talked about the legislative intent of the bill and where the Department of Education is going. We're optimistic that there will be a notice sent out. We're going to do the OR, try to get the OR finished by April, sometime in April, so we can get notice out to the parents that the students will have to have the certification of visual screening or visual exam. So they're... So I think it was a good meeting to get everyone on the right page and where we want to go for the next school year. So just pass that on for the good of the committee.
Great. Thank you very much. And what do we have up on Monday? We have public hearing work session on mascot.
Yes. Senate Bill 1509 relating to mascots, Madam Chair.
And do we have our literacy information hearing on Monday, or is that next weekend?
I'll double check. Right. I believe it's Monday.
So we should have a pretty full day on Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
Okay, anything else for the good of our order? Yes, Representative Huffman.
Madam Chair, since in the informational hearing of Representative Wisnett, he brought up the department, I just want to say that I was very disappointed over the weekend that it took Jan all of 2 minutes to respond to an email on the weekend, and I just... No, I'm joking. Kudos. I really didn't expect a response on the weekend. I was just kind of clearing things off my plate, and God bless her. She's so good. She's very responsive, and she got right back with me and said, I'll get an answer for you. So thank you.
Thank you. We all appreciate you very much.
Yes.
And you do respond really quickly. It's like you're living inside our minds.
But get away. Oh, that wouldn't be pleasant for her.
It would not. I would not wish that on anyone.
Can you do some vacuuming while you're in there?
Right.
Maybe clear a little disk space off.
I tripped one time and I